So returning to our treasures from Juniper Ridge, and specifically the teaching entitled The Pointing Out Instruction to the Old Lady. And so remember, there was this old lady devoted to the Dharma in a devotional way, but really unpracticed in meditation, a very circumscribed life, doesn't think much of her intelligence, is dealing with a little various problems of aging in the mind, and feels she's about to die soon. And as the great master Padmasambhava was leaving Samye, the great monastery of Samye, to go to the retreat place at Chimpu, on his way out, he was stopped by this woman, old lady, and basically asked him to teach her the Dharma, but teach her a Dharma that a woman like her could readily understand. And remember, first he just asked her to sit down and just let her mind relax into awareness. And so please do that too. Just let your mind be very attentive, wakeful, but relaxed. Nothing to do. Nothing to make happen. Just present and alert. And then he pointed at her heart. This was not a teaching for her head. This was a teaching for her heart. The heart is the center of things. We, unfortunately, when we listen to Dharma teachings, when we read Dharma teachings, we listen with our heads. And our heads are where the problem is. It is a faulty instrument. And so we listen to something that has the capacity to free us from this faulty instrument with the faulty instrument. Can you see the problem in that? And why, even though everyone in here has read many illustrious books, many wonderful teachings, have sought out teachers, have gone all over the place, why you still seek? It is because we are always seeking, even though it is the promptings of our heart and our yearnings for liberation and freedom and an end to suffering that bring us to Dharma, we then unfortunately enter the Dharma with our deluded mind. And let it be the arbiter of our practice. Not good. So he pointed directly to her heart. And if you remember yesterday, he said, there is absolutely no difference between a Buddha and a sentient being other than when a sentient being understands the nature of their mind, they're a Buddha. When they don't understand the nature of their mind, they're a deluded being, because they do not understand who and what they really are. They endlessly then go about the world acting from a total misperception about how things really are. And so they cannot, so to speak, help from screwing up. But then he went on to say, as you remember, Fortunately, everyone, and especially those of us here, like this woman, have had the good fortune that we have all the prerequisites. What does he call it? All the basic material for Buddhahood. None of us are deficient in any way in having that capacity. And it is not a matter of superior intelligence or inferior intelligence. If anything, people of superior intelligence, it might be better to be a person of inferior intelligence. People of superior intelligence, not only do they think too much, but they think because they understand something intellectually, they have understanding. So people of superior intelligence unfortunately have a greater capacity to delude themselves than people of inferior intelligence. Therefore, I am recommending. Again, intelligence is good for some things. To be intelligent is good for some things. And also intelligence can be useful in Dharma, because when one encounters the Dharma, one intelligence can see almost immediately what a logical, coherent, wise, practical teaching this is. Our intelligence can ascertain that. And so that for those who don't, again, for people who are much more from the heart, their relationship to the Dharma, to the teacher, is much more from the heart. They know it in their heart. But many of us, we first know it in our heads, so to say. We see the wisdom of these teachings. Hopefully over time it does become an affair of the heart, because affairs of just thought and intellect are often not long-lasting, because this mind it jumps around all over the place. One day it likes this, one day it likes that, and it's always dissatisfied. So you have many people who practice in the spiritual realm or the Dharma realm, and they're always going around from what? From one teacher to another teacher, taking this teaching, taking that teaching, reading this book, reading that book. When people like that, they get together with each other and they tell you, well, I just saw so-and-so. Oh, I saw so-and-so too. What teaching did you get from him? Oh, I got this teaching. Well, have you heard about this teacher? Oh, yeah, and it's like endless. They haven't even realized the teaching their first teacher gave them. But already they're out accumulating more. This is the dangers of a mind that is always seeking. So, He said to her three things. He said, very simple, to the simple lady. He said, by purifying externally perceived objects, your perceptions are freed by themselves. By purifying the perceiving mind within, your non-clinging awareness is freed in itself. As the lucid wakefulness between is delightful, you recognize your own nature. Okay? Very simple. Three things. Okay? This is so simple. Three things. There is what? The perceived object. Everybody clear? Right? Things we see, sounds we hear, things we smell, things we taste, things we sense in our body, and the things that our mind perceives, thoughts, feelings, perceptions. They're just, right? Those are all perceived objects. That's all there is. Okay? Then there is this sense of perceiver, right? There's something that perceives this. Is that clear? Something that's, we believe there's something inside here, ourself, our mind, or whatever we want to call it, that is perceiving these objects. Is that clear? And then there is the actual kind of, we might say, just the awareness or the perception or the, you know, if there's an object to be seen and there's somebody seeing, then the act of seeing is the thing that's in between. Are we clear? So, that's what's going on, right? Right. Like for the, seeing's an obvious one. So there's things that we see, we believe that there is somebody seeing it, and then there's just the act of seeing that connects the two, right? There's that, and then there's a seeing that makes, that brings it all together. Right? Okay, good. And we do it in everything. We think there's a hearer, we think there's a taster, and we think there's a thinker, right? We think there's somebody who's behind it, behind whatever is going on. And whatever is going on in relationship to objects. Right? If you had just been born kind of in space, well, think what that would be like. Right? Just imagine, you know, just if you had just been born into space. Nothing to see, no objects to see, no sounds, no smell, right? No language. So then yesterday we received the teachings that he told her about how to perceive these objects that are outside. Right? And he said, these objects, let's say, that are seen, let them be. Let seeing just light them up with its luminosity, with the act of seeing. Do not cling to them. Cling to them means what? Create any type of thought about them. Just let them be what they are. And he said, no matter what you perceive, earth, rocks, mountains, cliffs, plants, trees, houses, castles, goods, utensils, friends or foes, family members or companions, husbands or wives, sons and daughters, toward all these and all other things, you are uninvolved in the attitude of claiming ownership. Remember that? We were quite struck by that. Right. That rather than just letting things unfold in the realm of experience, the thinking mind, the ego mind, wants to make it about who? About me. Right. Every person we meet, every experience, you know, it's all about, right? Me. Lunch. What do I want to eat? Am I going to like it or not like it? How much should I take? Right? I mean, it's immediately the self is just, you know, makes it all about me. How am I feeling today? That's all we really care about. Every person we meet, right? Can I get this one to like me? Can I get this one, you know, what can I get out of this person? There must be something. Every situation, it's always about me. Even how can I help this, you know, it's like, give me something to do, because I'm immediately owning a piece of this. Okay. You are uninvolved in the attitude of claiming ownership. And so they are perceived, they are seen, they are heard, they are smelled, they are tasted, they are felt, they are seen, etc., but are not held in any way. We don't have to hold on. Again, we don't want to hold on also because there's intrinsically nothing to hold on to. Things are just arising and passing away, arising and passing away, arising and passing away. Everything is changing. The person we were yesterday is not the person we were today. We may be sitting next to somebody and think, I'm still sitting next to Harry, but Harry is not the same as he was yesterday. And if I'm still clinging to a thought of something that happened between Harry and I yesterday, I'm just in my thoughts, I'm contaminating Harry. By being free of clinging to anything whatsoever, you are purified of objects perceived externally. Right? So how do we cleanse the world? We free it to be just as it is. How is it? It is perfect. Now, that again, as I said, this perfection is not the perfection of perfect versus imperfect. Perfect meaning everything is just what it is. It is perfectly itself. Beautiful things are perfectly beautiful. Ugly things are perfectly beautiful. I mean, perfectly ugly. There's a perfection in everything. When we see it just as it is. But as soon as we want it to be different, and as soon as we, you know, compare it, why is something ugly? It's only ugly in comparison to something that we believe is beautiful, right? Inherently, there's nothing ugly or beautiful in anything. Right? We all know that the only difference when we garden between the flowers and the weeds is what? We've decided some things belong here and some things don't belong here. Some things we like and, you know. Weeds do not consider themselves weeds. In their world, they're no different than the flowers. They don't have complexes. Right? Weeds don't have inferiority complexes. They are quite content to be who they are. And you know what? They cannot help being who they are because they are the creation of causes and conditions. Just like who? Just like we, just like everything. How crazy to have complexes. Think you're better than anybody or less than anybody or the same as everybody. Right? Everything is unique, everything is different, everything is what it is. It is only our projection of our endless mental fabrications onto reality that contaminates the world that is what it is. Is that clear? So that is what he's talking about. Right? If you want to purify the world, you don't go, you know, you don't have to get a scrub brush and go out there and clean everything. You just need to accept things just as they are. And then you will see them as they truly are. See how easy this is? Let us continue. Objects being purified does not mean you stop perceiving. Okay? So some people think, oh, the purpose of a spiritual practice is to what? I just won't look. I'll just keep my eyes down, I just won't look. Right? I'll just avoid. I'll just hide. Right? And that way, you know, I'll create a very little narrow universe to myself, you know, that everything is controlled and manipulated and everything is perfect just the way I want it, and I will think, oh, what a wonderful world I live in. But we haven't really done anything either. So this is not about rejecting, as it said in the verses on the faith mind, trust in mind, that do not reject the sense domain. The world of the senses is the world of enlightenment. There's nothing to be rejected. There's nothing to be clung to. We have eyes, they see. We have noses, they smell. We have ears that listen, sounds. There is nothing impure in anything other than what we think it is. Objects being purified does not mean that you stop perceiving. It means not to hold and cling while being bright and empty. How are we to be? Bright. What does bright mean? Clear. The light's on. Awareness, clarity, mindfulness, wakefulness, right? That's what he means when he says bright. And empty means what? Empty of all our opinions, all our notions, all our ideas. Like the example of reflections in a mirror. Right? Very classic example in Buddhism. Like the example of reflections in the mirror. They appear, right? So when we see something in the mirror, we see a reflection, they are there. We see something. But that they are empty in that there is nothing to grasp, right? We know the reflections in the mirror are what? Are not real, are they? Right? If you see an apple reflected in the mirror, it certainly looks like an apple. It's a beautiful apple, right? But you wouldn't grasp it, would you? If you were hungry. If you did, you would be what? Disappointed. Most of us, all we're ever seeing are these reflections of reality in our mind. And that is why all our grasping at them, all our holding on to them, all our going after them, yearning for them, all our rejection of them, all, you know, the whole deal, at the end of it, not happy. And we think what? The problem is I just haven't done it right. I got to get a new strategy. And you know what? There are hundreds of thousands of people out there selling workshops and books on giving you a new strategy. Right? Every year, if you look in the self-improvement, blah, 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 you'll a new one, right? New bestseller. You know, and the longer you're alive, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you realize what? Every year there's a new bestseller. Why are people still buying them? I mean, they could have read the one 20 years ago. It's because endlessly, endlessly thinking there's something I got to do. Something I got to improve, got to get a new strategy in life. Right? There may be people in this room who've done that. The same way diets, right? Every year, a new diet. Bestseller. You want to make money? Come up with a diet. Every year, a new diet. And again, I mean, it's crazy. Like the examples of reflections in a mirror. They appear. Our thoughts about things appear. But they are empty because they are not to be grasped. They are just reflections. And all the things we see are also reflections in our mind and not to be grasped. What is seeing these flowers? Mind, for want of a better word, is seeing these flowers. These flowers are reflected in mind. Right? sounds are being heard in mind. And then they are gone. Your perceptions are known as perceptions occurring to yourself. This is in italics, so it must be a special phrase. So, you know your whole world in there? Everybody know their world? That world in there that's constantly talking and has ideas and opinions and judgments about everything. You know what they're known as? Perceptions occurring to yourself. Do you understand that? They're only occurring to yourself. Nobody else is listening. You see what he's saying? All your great thoughts, all your judgments, all your evaluations, everything that's going on inside there from morning till night that you think is so wonderful or terrible, that makes you happy, that makes you sad, that makes you feel good, that makes you feel terrible, all of that is only being heard by you. That's how unimportant it is. And yet we listen to it like it's gospel. It's our favorite radio station. You know, what's it playing now? Well, Robbie, if it tells you everything's great, how do you feel? Great. If it tells you everything's terrible, yeah. If it tells you everybody loves you, great. If it tells you nobody loves you, terrible. I mean, it's like, you know, and we go up and down like that, right? Never stopping to go, what is this? Just a reflection, just a perception that's only occurring to me. And when you're lost in that mind state, do you see the flowers? No. Do you hear the birds? No. Forgive us for not listening to you. You know, we don't even see ourselves as we really are. We just see what? Our thoughts. And like Robbie shared with us, you know, one day thoughts are telling you the world is wonderful. The next day, thoughts are telling you the world is terrible. One day, the world, you know, thoughts are telling you, you're great. You're great. Next day, the world, you know, your thoughts are telling you what? You're terrible. I mean, who would listen to somebody like that? I mean, one day tells you this, one day tells you that. Right? Would you take advice from somebody like that? So inconsistent? No. Your perceptions are known as perceptions occurring to yourself. They're only important to you. Nobody else cares. Nobody else even knows. Therefore, what? Leave them behind. Let them just come and go. Enter the world of reality. Next. By means of the inner perceiving mind being purified, right? Remember, we've just purified the external world. We're no longer grasping. We're no longer making up stories. We're just letting it be in bright awareness without clinging. By means of inner perceiving mind being purified, here is an instruction in liberating non-clinging awareness in itself. Okay, so now we're talking about this thing we call mind. no matter what occurs in your mind, i.e. the flow of thoughts, memories, or the even five poisonous emotions. Everybody know what he's talking about. These are the things that occur in our mind. Thoughts, ideas, stories, dramas, melodramas, issues, memories, afflictive emotions, positive, all this stuff, right? You know all that stuff? That's all the stuff that's occurring in your mind. When you do not focus upon them, the movement vanishes by itself. And thus you are untainted by the faults of thinking. Is that clear? When these thoughts arise, when these emotions arise, when these perceptions about life, ourself, arise, right? When these emotions arise, when these memories of the past arise, if we just let them be, do not grab onto them, do not push them away, do not analyze, do not interpret, do not be concerned about, be not disturbed in any way. And they will what? They will go. They will disappear. I assure you. I assure you. Why can I assure you? Because that is their nature. The nature of thought. Watch a thought. How long does a thought last in your mind? If you stop feeding them, but you just step back and you watch a thought. And hopefully everybody's been watching their thoughts, right? How long does a thought last in your mind if you just let it be?
Few seconds.
What?
2 seconds.
2 seconds. And that's a long one. And that's a long one. Right? Yeah. Just like that. If we let them go, they will disappear. That is their, they will disappear not because you're making them disappear, because that is their nature. Right? Anybody see the fireflies at night? What is their nature? Constant light? No. That is their nature. They don't put out a constant light, do they? We'd be concerned about a firefly that put out a constant light. They're bling, 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 bling. That's like thoughts. They just bling, bling. Anybody up last night watching the fireflies or in the last couple of nights? Right. Now, when you watched the fireflies, did you enjoy it? Yeah. Now, did you have to run out and catch one? Why do you laugh? It's crazy. Why would you do that? Why can't you just, stand there on the road or sit down and just enjoy them? That's all they're doing. And we're quite content to sit there and enjoy them, right? We don't have to go grab a bunch, right? Let me remember when your kids used to, I think badly about that, we used to grab them and put them in jars, right? And it would do what to the poor things? It would kill them, you know? Ignorance. We thought that by capturing them, we could, we would have this light, right, that would just continue. But we were ignorant, right? In capturing them, we harm them, didn't we? It's like that. So we are quite content to just stand in the road and watch this display of light, darkness, light, darkness, light, never knowing when the next blink's going to happen, right? Do we? We don't know, do we? Right, Charney, you can't go, oh, I know exactly where the next one, no, you don't know. It's, oh, so, and we're okay with that, right? We're quite happy with that. Can you imagine watching your mind the same way? Just blink, 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 blink. Don't have to interfere, don't have to control, don't have to capture. Just let it come and go. When you do not focus upon them, the movement vanishes by itself. Thus you are untainted by the faults of thinking. This is very important. It's sort of like Lee's question last night about memories. You know, why do they keep coming back? Again, mind, here now I mean mind in its true nature, is like the mirror. It is a mirror. It just reflects whatever appears to any of its six consciousnesses, right? It just reflects, just like the mirror. That's what it does. You know, in other words, if you held something in front of a mirror, like that apple, right? And then you remove that apple, would you find an impression of the apple still on the mirror? You wouldn't, would you? Right? If you made a horrible, ugly, ferocious, sad, demonic face in the mirror, and then you took it away, and then you looked at the mirror, would the mirror look in any way like that? No. How would it look? Clear. Ready to reflect whatever's next. If what comes next is a beautiful, smiling, happy face, it will reflect that, won't it? And yet when you take that away and you look at the mirror, how is it? Just clear. No impression at all. Is that clear? This is actually the way our mind, our true mind is actually called our mirror mind. That is why Robbie could have had a miserable, rotten day yesterday, and yet today, be okay? Be okay? That is why we could have had a million thoughts an hour ago, and we could be sitting here quite concentrated and relaxed, right, and aware. Why is that? Because this mind is clear and bright and reflects whatever appears, and when that thing is gone, there's no trace. And yet, because of our misunderstanding, because of our grasping, because of our reifying, we are endlessly, because of our grasping, because of our clinging, because of our endlessly holding on to everything, we are endlessly creating impressions that cover our true mind. Because we do not just let thoughts come and go. Remember that thought Harry had that lasted 2 seconds? But there's a whole bunch of thoughts that Harry doesn't just let come and go, does he? When they arise, he goes, and then he has another one, 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 and he has another one, and another one, right? And it gets big. And then what else does Harry do? He throws in some emotion. All right, let's get some emotion cooking here, right? And then if he's really in good form, he brings in some memories of the past and this and that, and now it's, how is it? He's delicious, and he's just there, and that poor mirror is just getting covered. Right? It's getting covered. It's like I have a tomato, I hold it up in front of the mirror. The mirror just reflects the tomato, right? When I put the tomato down, it's clear. But let's say I hold up the tomato and I smoosh it. You know, and it runs all over the mirror. Now what? Right? Now when I look at the mirror, I don't see a reflection anymore, do I? I see this dirtiness. Many of us, when we look in our minds, we see this dirtiness. We see these obscurations, right? And we think what? Right? We think that's our mind. You see, we think that's our mind. And again, I mean, if you look in Harry's mind, it's not just one tomato, is it? No, he's been squash, zucchini, cucumbers, mustard, ketchup, I mean, right? Years and years. And so when we look in our mind, and many people look in their mind and they go, what? Charno, right? They go, what? Yuck. Or Andrew goes, yuck. Where can I leave? You know, can I leave this mind somewhere, right? Leave it down the tent. I mean, you know, right? You see, and in a certain way, you're right. Anger and rage and fear and, you know, that they are yucky. Right? They are. There's nothing, you're absolutely right. The mistake you make is you think that is you. Right? Rather than it's just the stuff that's been left. You know, Dharma practice is about what? Cleaning that mirror. That mirror that is covered with tomatoes, pasta, mayo. What else?
Cilantro.
Cilantro, you're like. Yeah, you see, this is Harry. He wants to pretty it up. Harry. No go, no cilantro. Just recognize it for what it is. Mind. Garbage is garbage.
It doesn't stay delicious very long.
Mm-mm-mm. Garbage is garbage. Again. If we know that all that dirtiness is just a covering, and the behind that dirty is dirty all the time, it has never stopped reflecting. Isn't that clear? Even though the mirror is covered with all this stuff, it's still its basic fundamental capacity to just reflect things as they are has not changed one bit, right? How do you know that? Because as soon as you clean it, oh, a beautiful mirror reflecting clearly everything that appears in it. No matter what occurs in your mind, the flow of thoughts, memories, or the five poisonous emotions, when you do not focus on them, the movement vanishes by itself. Remember? This is a practice for who? Lazy people. Right? Well, now you can't get any lazier than that. I don't have to do anything. A lot of people, you know, what are they doing? I'm working on myself. Very busy working on myself. Working on my stuff, working on my issues. Letting go of this, freeing myself from that, working through that, letting go of that, understanding that, you know what I mean, right? That's the way we talk to each other, right? Very busy. Now that can be a legitimate path for those who like to endlessly work, who like to turn everything into projects. And we turn ourselves into projects, right? That's our big project. People talk that way. You know, this year, my project is going to be to work on myself. That's my project for this year. We do love our projects, Americans, don't we? We just love to do our projects. So this is not that. When you do not focus upon them, the movement vanishes by itself. That means the movement of the thought, the movement of the emotion, the movement of the memory. Because that is its nature. It is the nature of the firefly on, off. We don't have to do anything, right? Very delightful. We don't have to do anything. We can just enjoy it. Enjoy the display. You could even enjoy the display of your thoughts. Just a lot of them, most of them are fairly silly. Some of them are downright stupid. Some of them are fairly melodramatic, histrionic, you know, I mean, all, you know, sorry. Just like going to the movies, right? You can enjoy a movie. But you don't have to jump into the screen, do you? When the movie's over, what do you do? What? What do you do when the movie's over? You leave. Movie's over. Right? Could have been quite a drama, right? Could have been scary, could have been happy, could have been very teary and emotional, right? When the movie's over, what do? You get up. Let's go get a cappuccino, right? I mean, that's right. I mean, we just were through this deeply emotional experience. People died. I mean, you know, it could have been a disaster movie. The world might have come to an end, right? You know, we get up, we walk out. Let's go get something to eat. Right? It's because this mind has this capacity. We could have been fully involved in the movie, right? Went through all the emotional gamut of whatever we saw. And yet, we can get up and out, right? And we're fine. Right? 20 minutes ago, you could have been teary-eyed, crying, so heartfelt, this movie, so sad or so poignant, right? And you get up and you know, let's get something to eat. Right? What's next? This is this mind. It is very free. See, that shows you that you can do that. But we don't do that, right? Right, Judith? What do we do with our dramas? Replay them, right? We don't just, when they're over, we just don't go on. Think about them, analyze them, worry. And we wonder. When you do not focus upon them, the movement vanishes by itself. Thus you are untainted by the faults of thinking. Do you hear that? These teachings that I'm sharing with you are some of the most direct and profound teachings in Buddhism. Right? Buddhism has an incredible structure. Anybody who's been around Buddhism, studied Buddhism, or been to various kinds of teachers or teachings, realize there's tons of teachings out there, aren't there? Tons of ways and techniques, right, to deal with this and deal with that. This is the heart. It's direct. It directly deals with the mind, just as it is. It is free of all fabrication, all elaboration. There are no techniques here. These teachings introduce us to our natural mind, the way things really are. Traditionally, you never got teachings like this, like we're giving them here. Traditionally, you went through a whole series, developmental series, of study and practice and training. And at the end, your teacher would give you these teachings. But these are different times, so we are very fortunate. My own teacher, a Tibetan teacher, who taught me, when I told him that these kinds of teachings were available in bookstores and that anybody could buy them, he was aghast. He couldn't believe it. Again, it's not as if these were secret teachings like, you know, esoteric teachings, but they were secret teachings, meaning they would be given to you by your teacher at a certain point. And they would always be given very directly, with explanation and pointing out about what they mean and how to practice it. So the idea that that anybody could purchase them, again, this was, he hadn't ever been to the West, so it was unbelievable to him. But because these teachings are now available, anybody can buy this book. Therefore, it is important that their meaning and practice be explained. Thus you are untainted by the faults of thinking. Okay. Tainted. Why are we tainted? We are tainted by our thinking, we are tainted by our thoughts, because we grab at them as if they're real. And when we grab at them and we create all this activity that does contaminate our mind. And we will feel it. Many people wonder, you know, Robbie may wonder, why, you know, I was feeling so good. Why all of a sudden did this dark cloud descend on me? It's because, you know, from the past, these kinds of mind states have been indulged. Not like consciously, like, you know, you love them, but they've been thought about, they've been dealt with, they've been allowed to contaminate our minds, and they leave impressions. And so therefore they will, over time, continue to arise just on their own. Sometimes they arise in situations that bring it up, but like you were saying yesterday, they just arise out of nowhere. And many of these kind of habitual mind states are like that. Right? They just have a life of their own. And many people wonder about that. You know, I was feeling so good. Why all of a sudden do I feel heavy? Or why do I, you know, all of a sudden feel sad or feel angry? Or do I feel scared or worried? You know, because again, a lot of these things have now taken on a life of their own. They no longer need external triggers to set them off. Is that clear? The mind has been contaminated. But again, starting from today, no matter how much, no matter what has been done in the past, beginning today, we all have the possibility to start cleaning things up. Everybody here, whether this is your first retreat or your 31st retreat, it makes no difference. But we have to understand what these teachings are telling us, and we have to take them in and make them your own. So like I will say to Harry, Harry, if for the rest of the day you maintain a constant awareness and vigilance in your mind and are very diligent in that, and as soon as a thought arises, you know it and you do nothing. You just let it be. You don't chain one after the other. You don't push it away. You don't do anything. See what happens. The mind at ease, but yet very alert. See what happens. Try it out for yourself. Again, for some people it will not be easy, right? Because we're so used to, addicted, right? Somebody said, Fred, you can't have a drink tonight, I would say what? So what? That's fine. But if I was an alcoholic and somebody said to me, I can't have a drink tonight, that could be a problem. Right? So, many of us are addicted. And so, we will find that even though this all makes sense to us, the actual doing may be a little difficult. If you find it's too difficult, then use a little technique. Right? You can just look right at the thought and say, thinking, thinking. That will cut it. But you have to have a commitment that you no longer want to pursue your thoughts. You see, I mean, there's got to be a change. We have to see things differently. Right? The same way, you know, we may be in solitary practice and outside walking around and like somebody was saying yesterday, start making a story up about the brook, or reminds me of, who was saying about, reminds me of Ansel Adams' picture or something. Or, yeah, I mean, it's right, I mean, you know, and again, if you can, just look right at that thought and just let it disappear. But if you can't, just look at it and say, thinking, thinking, right? And then just kind of, you know, bring yourself back to the present. Thus you are untainted by the faults of thinking. To be flawless, which is uncontaminated, to be flawless within does not mean to become an inert stone. Okay? Many people go, oh, what does that mean? I can't have any feelings, I can't, no, it doesn't, I'm just a stone, I don't react to anything. No. You'll still be totally alive, right? You just won't be holding. You won't be grasping. You'll let those feelings just come and go. When things are pleasurable, you will feel what? Pleasure. When you get bitten by the mosquito, you will feel what? A little unpleasantness, that's all. That's it. Just let it come and go. Don't make a big deal about it. In that way, we will not leave flaws in our mind. So to be flawless within does not mean to become an inert stone. It means that your awareness remains free of the flaws of thinking. Okay? Now again, this is very important. Do not think that he is saying thoughts will not arise. Will thoughts arise? You better believe it. That is one of the wondrous aspects of this mind that stones don't have. Right? One might say, and you know it's said, that these thoughts and perceptions are simply the ripples on the ocean, right? They are not different than the ocean. But the, if you look at the top of the ocean and you see this, these ripples, and you think, oh, I see the ocean. You don't see the ocean, do you? You're just seeing what? The surface. Anybody here ever scuba dive? You know, when you go under the top, what do you find out? A lot going on down there. Much deeper. Deep, deep, deep. Right. So again, thoughts, just the surface of the mind. Don't take the surface for the whole thing. Surface is just the tiniest part of the ocean. So it remains, your awareness remains free of the flaws of thinking. Is that clear? When we grasp at the thoughts, when we think they're real, that's the flaw. All my thoughts about Harry are not Harry. Is that clear? They are only, as it said here, perceptions occurring to myself. If I want to know Harry, what do I need to do? Engage, look, talk with. Right? Be present to. Then I'm dealing with the real Harry. Is that clear? Everything else is just mental fabrication. It means your awareness remains free of the flaws of thinking, like the example of having gone to an island of precious gold. On this golden island, not even the name stone, quote unquote, exists. Likewise, once your thinking dissolves into original wakefulness, there is not even the name of thought. Does the ocean know it has ripples? No. Does the deep ocean think about how its ripples are doing today? No. The ocean and the ripples are one. Likewise, when your thinking dissolves into original wakefulness, there is not even the name thought. Thoughts don't stand out as separate things. Just like the fireflies. Just blip, 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 blip. If you asked a firefly, is your light on or is it off? It would look at you kind of, what's he talking about? It's like that. Are there any questions? Yes. Good. Yeah, these teachings are a 180 from the way we, it's good if we're confused.
As I'm hearing you describe mind, I understand about fear and how we hold on to things and so forth, but I would ask, it seems like you're describing mind separate from an awareness that starts loading mind. Who's, who or the what is what is coloring the mirror? The mind. Not, I thought the mind was a consciousness. That was kind of where I wrapped up. The mind was a consciousness. But now I'm unclear.
But who's saying that? Who knows? Who's saying, I thought I got it, but now I don't got it, and before it was clear, and now it's unclear.
I'm asking you.
What is that? No, I want you to look. What is that? Is that, hold on, but look, if you look right there, do you see a small mind and a big mind? Does the ocean see the difference between the ripples and the depth? No. What?
I'm not an ocean. Human beings are...
No, you're just thinking. Stop thinking. Stop thinking. Okay. Do you see me? Please look at me. Okay. Are you aware of me? Okay. And now take your focus off of me. And just notice awareness, that which is aware. What is that like? Yeah, you can't, yeah, you're stopped. You can't say anything. There you go. Shut you right up. It shuts us right up. In Dzogchen, that's called when we look, when we turn and we look at the source, immediately we are blocked because there's nothing there. And there's really nothing that can be said about what's not there. And yet, are you aware of me? Yes. This awareness. I mean, is it like in the back of your head? Where is it?
I don't know.
You stop, don't think. Yeah. You don't know. I mean, what does it feel like, this awareness? Like, you're aware of me? Between us, there is this awareness. Does this awareness feel like it's only out here, or is it also inside you? Awareness.
Both.
It's both. You call it both, but is there really a difference?
Maybe
not. Or maybe no difference. Yeah. What if you just relaxed into that? Stop. Just relax into that. Stop thinking. Stop talking. Just look and just relax into this thing you're calling awareness. Just relax into it. Just let go. What? I know. But that which is not relaxed is not the same as this. But even, Elena, when you say, oh, but there's a part of me that's not relaxed, right? And if I said to you, Elena, can you look into your mind for that part of you that you say is not relaxed? What do you see? Can you find a part of you that's not relaxed when you look into your mind? Really, what does it look like? It doesn't look like anything. Is there really a part of your mind that's not relaxed? No. You just think that is. But as soon as you look, you stop thinking and you start looking right at it, it disappears. It disappears not because of anything you're doing. It disappears because in truth, there's nothing there. It's just a fabrication, right? Have you ever been to see a good magician? Right? I mean, hats, rabbits are coming out of hats. Women are being sawed in half. You know, people are going into a box here and coming out of a box over there. Right? People are pulling flowers out of ears. Right? It certainly appears that way, doesn't it? But you know what? It's really not that way. It just appears that way. Right? So it appears that there are these different parts of yourself. But when you actually look right where you think it is, it disappears. It disappears because there's nothing there. Just whatever. But this is a shift in ground. Most of us, our ground has always been our ideas, our thoughts, who I am, who you are. The whole, to let go of all that and to really deeply enter the truth of one's own mind. And like we're doing here, be willing to investigate. You know, what is a self? Who am I? What is my mind? What's a thought? Then we may realize that things are not as they've always appeared. Buddhism does not reject the world of appearance. It only says things may not be as they appear. In the same way, the tricks of a magician we can enjoy, can't we? We enjoy seeing a good magician, don't we? We enjoy seeing a good illusionist, right? But we know that appearance is not the same as reality. We know the difference. You have no separate selves. And if you just stop and look, which is what he's teaching us here. Just stop and look right at it. You will see what's there or not there. But no one has ever told us that, right? All we know is just follow thoughts, follow them this way, follow them that way. Manipulate them, control them, analyze them, straighten them out, improve upon them. Nobody ever said to us, right? I mean, never in my upbringing did anybody said, why don't you just look at a thought and see what her thought really is? I mean, has anybody ever said that to you? No. Yeah, when an emotion arises, just look at it. Just experience it. Don't do anything. No one ever told us that, did they? That is why these teachings are so precious, because they show us something that we would have never gotten on our own. So we are fortunate to have these kinds of teachings available to us that really teach us the truth about what's going on and show us another way. Any other questions? Good.